I'm going to spend a little time talking now about a story from NPR News on what's really happening down at the border. It's a fact check by reporter Camila Domonoske, who's with us now via telephone. Camila, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on today.
Hi, Barry. Thanks for having me.
You bet. I think we're all kind of fascinated by this development, the immigrant caravan, this big crush of people a few days ago at the Tijuana border. And I think a fact check is certainly well worth our time because there's so many conflicting political angles and so many points of view. So let's get right into it right now. There's chaos, there's confusion. Is there really, from your perspective and what you've learned, are there people who are trying to force their way into the country, and are these the bad hombres that the president has been warning about?
I certainly would not use the phrase bad hombres to describe the caravan in total. So we're talking about a large number of people here. That's the first thing to make clear. The caravan includes thousands of people who have fled Central America and are looking to come to the United States. And most of those people in the caravan say that what they want to do is seek asylum. Seeking asylum is a perfectly legal process. Asking for asylum is a right protected by law. That's U.S. law and international law. And so that involves going to Border Patrol at a port of entry or along the border, historically, and saying that you're persecuted in your home country. And that starts a process of asking the United States for permission to stay in the country. That is not illegal immigration. That is not people who are coming into the country and flying under the radar. These are people who are actually seeking out authorities and starting a formal legal process to request asylum. Mm-hmm. But you have then these thousands of people south of the border who want to seek asylum. And what they've found is that they are not able to do that. And what the authorities are telling them is that there's not enough room at the port of entry, and they have to wait. And that wait list has been growing and growing from weeks into now. People are looking at possibly months of waiting in shelters or outside south of the border. And that's sort of the background context for what happened over the weekend when there were hundreds of these migrants from this caravan that, again, includes thousands of people. A smaller group were at a portion of the fence between the U.S. and Mexico and were protesting the slow pace of this processing of asylum claims, the fact that people weren't allowed to start their claims. And then a subset of that group began actually storming a section of the fence. And at that point, Border Patrol, and we should note this is a large group of agents, and there are actually some members of the military, they're in a backup role. They're not at the front lines, and they aren't armed. But mostly Border Patrol began firing tear gas at the group that was trying to cross, to breach the fence there. This was a less robust section of fencing than some other portions of the border, this particular entry point that migrants were pressing up against. And you then had tear gas deployed several times. It was a windy day. So the group of migrants that were specifically there trying to cross that fence were affected, and so were a lot of other people who were much farther away from that particular altercation. Children were involved. There were children who were farther away from the fence who experienced the effects of tear gas. According to U.S. authorities, there were also children arrested on the U.S. side of the border after this altercation directly at the fence. So that's sort of an overview. This wound up causing this port of entry, which is the busiest in the Western Hemisphere, to be shut down for a period of several hours on Sunday before it was reopened. And at this point, it has been reopened.
Mm. So several different facets here. Let's attack a couple of them. First of all, people requesting asylum, they're coming from where primarily, and are there claims of persecution in their home countries, to your knowledge, accurate and fair?
So, again, I want to be clear that there's so many people involved that it's impossible to say with a sort of blanket summary whether all of these people have legitimate asylum claims or would be evaluated to have legitimate asylum claims once they make their request. We know that most of them are coming from Honduras, and Honduras is having an ongoing political crisis and a massive gang violence problem. And so people are fleeing violence and saying that they're being targeted because of their lack of membership in a gang or because they're seen as being affiliated with one group or another group politically. And persecution for your membership or non-membership in a particular social group and for your political opinion is a legitimate basis for asylum. Of course, the question then is whether they would actually be able to demonstrate to the United States that that is their situation. But there's a process for this. There's a fairly lengthy process for evaluating someone's asylum claim. And so the issue here is people who are saying that they aren't being allowed to even make that request to have the claim evaluated on the case-by-case basis that it has to be evaluated on, because you can't look at a mass of 5,000 people and say whether they all are or aren't qualifying for this treatment.
Mm-hmm. The other issue that constantly comes up in this conversation is that some member of the administration may say, well, we're not really doing anything different than was done before. This is the same way Obama handled it. Is that a checkable fact? Is this a new approach in terms of the asylum claims? My understanding is typically the person would be allowed into the country while the claim for asylum was processed, right?
Yes. So there absolutely is a difference in how this administration has been handling asylum claims in general. And we can look over just this last summer, sort of up to the present. One big change that you saw was the administration pushing back on anyone who was seeking asylum not at a formal port of entry. So instead of going to San Ysidro and Tijuana and going across the formal crossing, people crossing the border illegally at a point where there isn't a checkpoint, and then when they find Border Patrol on the other side, turning themselves in, saying, I would like to seek asylum, and that was perfectly acceptable under sort of U.S. precedent. Then this summer, as everyone sort of is aware, there's massive, massive changes in how the U.S. was handling these crossings, and all illegal crossings were being prosecuted, even if they ultimately resulted in asylum claims, and families were being separated. And this is no longer officially the U.S. policy, but then what happened is the Trump administration decided that there would no longer be a process for asylum seekers who crossed, again, outside of a formal port of entry. They're trying to direct everybody to the formal port of entry and saying we won't even hear claims from anyone who crosses illegally. And that has been blocked, actually, by a federal court and is an ongoing legal battle. So you can see in what the Trump administration has been trying to do on a formal level, definitely a different orientation toward asylum seekers. And in terms of the response to the number of people who are seeking asylum, what's happening right now at ports of entry, including San Ysidro, the one in question this past weekend, is a metering system where only a certain number of migrants are allowed to seek asylum per day, somewhere between 40 and 100 per day. Again, we're talking about thousands of people who are waiting. And this is something that it's not completely unprecedented. Obviously, there are limited resources at a border crossing. They can't handle an infinite number of people, so sometimes there is a wait or a backlog. But during the Obama administration, when there was the massive influx of arrivals from Central America, including unaccompanied children, in 2014, one of the things that the Obama administration did was set up temporary processing facilities. So when there was a backlog, instead of saying, okay, you're waiting for months on the other side of the border, they put more resources on the U.S. side of the border to bring people through in larger numbers. So there's absolutely a difference in the way these claims are being handled on the ground and also the sort of overall orientation. Although, again, not taken one by one, These things are not unprecedented. It's not unprecedented for someone to have to wait to make an asylum claim, but the overall pattern is distinctly different.
Hmm. We're talking here with Camila Domonoske, reporting for NPR, and has done a piece fact-checking the issues at the border currently that we're all spending so much time looking at. And if you're like me, you're wondering from what you can snippets you see on a TV newscast or a blip you hear on a radio news report, like, am I getting the full picture? And so this is a really valuable piece of reporting that you've done here, and thank you for doing that. One of the unprecedented moves that President Trump has made was sending all of these military personnel to the border, and I believe the figure was around 5,000 or 6,000 total, right?
Yeah.
This immediately brought up a lot of questions about what the military is legally allowed to do in regard to civilian populations and the interaction between the military and the border patrol, the border folks who are focused on that. You mentioned that the U.S. military is serving in a supporting role. But all of this rhetoric that's come out about lethal force and about treating a thrown rock like it was a rifle bullet and so on, get into that with us a little bit in terms of what the military function is and what the president can and can't ask the military to do in this situation.
Right. So if you look at the rhetoric about the use of these military troops along the border, and you compare what's coming out of the White House, what President Trump is saying, to what people with Border Patrol, people with the U.S. military are saying about their roles, you get a very, very different picture. So like you said, the president talks about lethal force and talks about responding to rock throwing with bullets. And that does not match what Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis says about what the military is doing at the border, and it doesn't match what the border authorities say about what these military troops are doing. The troops that have been sent to the border include military engineers who are setting up barricades, barbed wire, and fortified sort of fence situations to help have more of a barrier for Border Patrol to defend, and also military police who are there to protect the military troops, there to protect the military engineers. And one thing that did happen is that reportedly the White House has authorized those military troops to take a more active role in defending the Border Patrol who are on the border, who are also federal agents. So just to be clear, troops always have the right to act in their own self-defense. So it's not new to authorize troops to defend themselves if they feel that they are seriously under attack. The president has reportedly expanded their authority to cover other federal agents who are also there at the border. But Jim Mattis says that this does not amount to any calls for lethal force, that there has been no call for lethal force from the Department of Homeland Security, which runs the Border Patrol, and that their role is to assist. They're there as backup. They're not armed. You have military police with shields who are standing behind the Border Patrol. And actually, they aren't even immediately behind the Border Patrol because Border Patrol have their own tactical units, people who might look like they're military, but they're not. They're actually part of our standard Border Patrol staffing. And they are immediately behind the Border Patrol to protect our Border Patrol officers. So there is a sort of, there's multiple layers of defense here, and we don't have armed U.S. troops lining the border prepared to shoot at migrants on the other side. That is, as the military and as the Department of Homeland Security have been sort of very consistent in saying, not the role of the military, even when the president makes it sound otherwise.
Mm-hmm. What about the proposed tent cities? This is another thing that came out of the White House, the idea of keeping those seeking asylum or any kind of potential immigrant across the border, not letting them in any way, but building these tent cities to hold people. Is that actually happening, and or will that happen?
So the Remain in Mexico policy proposal, at this point it's not an agreement, but this is an idea that has been floated by the Trump administration, where instead of people crossing into the United States and being on this side of the border as their asylum claims are processed, they would remain in Mexico for the duration of that asylum claim proceeding, which can take a very long time, months, a year or more years. And this is obviously would require the cooperation of the Mexican government, which is currently in transition. There's a new government that's about to take power. So that's one sort of wrinkle in these conversations is we're about to have a new president in Mexico. And it's, again, going to be subject to negotiation between the U.S. and Mexico. This would be somewhat more comparable to how refugees are processed. People who want to become a refugee to the United States are not allowed into the United States until that claim is processed. So, again, it's not wholly unprecedented. The numbers that we're talking about, it could be quite a draw on Mexico and on these border communities to support these thousands of asylum seekers for as long as their claims take to process. And there are lots of questions about the legality of a proposal and the safety involved. Mexico is not considered a safe third country, quote-unquote. So this is if you are seeking asylum and you're coming to the U.S. from Canada, we don't allow you to make an asylum claim because we say you're in Canada already, you're already safe.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico is not treated the same way. There's a high level of violence in Mexico. Many people in the caravan say that they sought to travel in a caravan for safety. So Mexico is, in general, not regarded as a safe place for asylum seekers to stay. So there are questions about whether it would be safe for them to stay while their claims are being processed. Lots of questions because, again, this is a proposal, an idea that has not actually become an agreement.
Yeah. One of the biggest statements or attitudes or bits of rhetoric, as the case may be, that needs the fact-checking is the fundamental question of whether immigration, illegal immigration, legal immigration, or asylum seeking is on the rise, because that's how it's being portrayed. Prior to the midterms, particularly, the word invasion was being used, and creating the sense that there was this huge upsurge in people trying to get into the country. I know you've looked at those facts as well. What's the truth there?
Yeah, so I would actually recommend a piece that my colleague Joel Rose did earlier this month about the rates of particularly apprehension, so people who are caught on the southern border attempting to cross illegally. And those numbers are not up. In general, they're down. They're significantly lower than the kinds of numbers that we saw in the 90s and the 2000s. And it's not increasing. It's largely on the decline. And this is one thing that is true, however, is that there are some shifts in who are coming. So particularly the rise in the number of families is notable. So there are patterns, there are changes, but there's not an enormous influx that's a notable increase over mm-hmm. recent years.
Yeah, and I think this stereotype that some people may have that the illegal immigrant is a Mexican to begin with, who's crossing the border legally to go and work in agriculture, that's really not true at all now, is it?
That's incredibly outdated.
Yeah, that's a generation ago.
That's reflecting a past and not our present situation. The patterns have really shifted, and specifically with these migrants that we're talking about here, they're in Mexico now, but they're from Central America, and they went on a very long journey to get through Mexico to reach the United States. That's absolutely a shift that I think has happened that the popular perception of immigration has not kept up with.
Yeah. Another thing that's been said that needs fact-checking is the idea, and I touched on this bad hombres idea, that people who have criminal intent or who are, who knows, engaged in espionage, the president even suggested there were Arabs mixed into these groups and so forth. Is there some reality to that? Is this a technique that someone who had ill will and bad intentions would possibly use to get into the country?
Again, I struggle with trying to answer these questions that are broad in mm-hmm. these terms. I will say that asylum is a difficult process. You are agreeing to a series of interviews. You're engaging with Border Patrol. You're and then shuttled into the immigration system very formally, and most people who go into that process show up for their hearings. If you were trying to remain low and avoid detection, this is not something that you would do. Claiming asylum would not be the way to enter the country without anyone noticing.
Yeah. So, in that scenario, logically, the potential terrorist is the one who's going to be trying to sneak across the border unseen to, act out their nefarious intentions, not line up to fill out forms and take interviews.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, there's very little logic in that theory. Okay. This has been really excellent. Camila Domonoske reporting for NPR on the fact check of what's really happening down at the border. And I really appreciate your time. Good work. And I hope we'll get a chance to talk again.
Thank you so much, Barry.
All right. Take care. Bye. Read that full story if you'd like, and I encourage you to do that. NPR.org, and you'll find this easily. Fact check what's happening on the U.S.-Mexico border. It was published yesterday. We have 7:27 showing on the official KVON Morning Show clock coming up later in the program. 8 o'clock hour, a couple of different topics. We're going to talk with Diane McBride at 8:05. She's the director of the Lucky Penny Productions presentation of a new Christmas musical called Scrooge in Love, one of the many holiday entertainment options you have in Napa Valley for the next few weeks ahead. Scrooge in Love is opening this Friday. We'll find out why Diane McBride loves this new show so much that she's directing it for the third time. We'll talk about it at 8:05. Second half of the 8 o'clock hour, Lena Zeldovich is a science and food writer. She authored a book called Black Gold, and the conversation is about turning poop into power. You ever think about, is it breakfast time? Okay, we'll save that till 8:35. Speaking of breakfast, don't forget it's National French Toast Day today. Time for a break. News up next at the half hour.